Hey, got the morning show here with Aaron, and in the studio I've got Robs. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you've just been up Porongia over the weekend with some boys?
Yeah, still recovering. Well, not recovering from that. Sleeping outside last night as well. So
it's been cold.
Apologies if I'm a bit spacey this morning.
We don't seem that spacey yet. It was cold though. Like, and I know you have a different perspective on cold than I do, but I will note that yesterday was easily the coldest day we've had.
Mm.
And you were probably, if you were up the top of Porongia yesterday, you would have been in the cloud, I presume.
Well, it's Friday night. Friday night we were
there. Oh, Friday night, okay.
Yeah, so coming back Sunday lunchtime. But yeah, it was a chilly night, but it's never as chilly in the bush than it is in the open. Because the trees do a fairly good job at regulating the temperature there. So, you know, it's always a bit cooler in summer and a bit warmer in winter.
Okay.
So that helps. And obviously fires, such a blessing.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not in a sleeping bag.
Is the fire a challenge when it's wet? I'm sure we've asked this question before.
Yeah, well, fire is always a challenge. And I guess with experience and good technique, you find ways to sort of overcome that. But yeah, we didn't really have too much problem. Managed to make a hand drill set.
Okay.
Down there, and got the ember, but I put the ember out because I wanted to let the boys. They used a flint strike.
Okay.
Good learning for them.
Yeah, yeah. So you did the bow drill.
Yeah, I had one as a backup because I kind of have a rule that I don't let myself use a flint strike. So if they were going to struggle with a flint strike and they needed me to step in, that would have been my go to.
Okay, but the flint strike's very easy, isn't it?
No, there's a fair bit of technique to it. It's easy if you got really good tinder.
I've watched you do it, so yeah. it probably looks easy.
If you've got really good tinder, then yeah, it's easy. But if you're just collecting tinder in the middle of winter from a damp bush, it's a bit more challenging.
Tinder doesn't feel like the right word for what you find in a damp bush in the middle of winter. It'd be like not that dry, I presume.
Nah, well, you can always find stuff if you know where to look.
Okay. And so how old were the boys you were up there with?
Four 13-year-olds.
Four 13-year-olds,
yeah, it was
okay.
My boy Matai and some of his buddies. Calling it in, they had a bit of fun at Kuratayo about a month ago, building huts and cooking on a fire, and told me they're keen to get in the bush and do it properly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, made space for supporting them.
And I guess like a walk up Porongia is not that hard, is it?
We didn't go.
Well, how did you do it though? Did you bring tents?
I brought a tarp as a backup.
Yeah.
And they brought sleeping bags. And yeah, a couple of knives. We didn't walk far. We only walked for about an hour, but we were off track. It was very, very slow going.
Okay, so this is, yeah, so, all right, a lot of people have been up Porongia and they'll go, well, yeah, we go to the top and there's a hut and this is how you do the walk, but that's not you are off the beaten track is the way you do things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so much more of a challenge and it just really demands of you a lot more than following a track, you know, your awareness, because there's branches and vines and things to navigate, and you just need to be careful and you need to pay attention. Whereas when you're on a track, I always find you're a bit more like a train, you know, you just go and you're just following, and it's quite easy to actually switch off,
which
you know, some people, that's what they go for, to be able to do that. But
yeah,
I think in terms of nature connection, switching on is the goal.
Yeah, well, my way of explaining it for what you're doing is you're creating the situation so people are present and engaged.
And I guess that's the point, you know, for me, you know, nature offers a very rich and challenging experience for people, so especially for young people, teenagers, it really nourishes and nurtures a great skill set for life. Navigating that, you know, you need a lot of concentration and calmness and self-observation and natural observation of what's around you, and all your senses need to be engaged, you know, and it's always the challenge of the night, you know, especially midwinter ahead of you. So
did you kind of like let them lead?
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
And what was the intention? Like, we're here, where are we going? Like, how did that...
I think they were, you know, a lot of them have been doing a bit of bush time. I've known these boys for a while, so I've taken a few of them in before over the years. But I think a lot of it was them actually figuring it out for themselves and following, and it was probably the first time for all of them that they've actually kind of led themselves in the bush and being fully in charge of their experience there and where they go and what they do and the timing of everything. And so I just wanted to give them the space to explore that. And
given that your intention is never to get to a particular place on a map, how did they even decide what direction to head?
Well, we wanted to kind of veer away from the main track.
Yeah.
And we kind of headed towards the sort of more northern side of the mountain, for obvious reasons, just getting a bit more sun and a bit drier underneath. So it was just a matter of walking and without necessarily a destination or a goal, but they found a place, and when they found it, they knew, you know, this is it. This is where we want to spend the night. And
what was that place like? Was it flat for starters?
No, there's not a lot of flat space.
Well, that's what
Bologna or Carioi as well, really. I mean, up on the ridges, you'd get a bit, but then you're a bit more susceptible to the wind, and that's what keeps you cold at night if you get the breeze on you. It wasn't too far away from the stream. It was a good distance, which is obviously having access to the water, but not too close because then it hides all the sound around you.
Yeah.
Not that there's a lot of sound on Pirongia. It's the quietest mountain I've ever been on.
You want to hear the tigers creeping in.
Mm.
Yeah, but no.
I didn't even see a fantail. It's my experience of Pirongia and that side and that northern side is this. It's a very quiet place.
I know there's a lot of trapping happening over there. Is it not over the whole mountain? Or?
There was some trap lines, but they didn't seem to have been checked, like maintained fairly recently. Not too many traps around.
I mean, that's a big mountain. It's bigger than
it's huge.
Our one.
But so. I know they have reintroduced the Kuakako, I think, which obviously is probably a milestone at the end of a large period of time of actually monitoring and trapping.
Yeah, well, we had Bexy in here a few weeks ago, and so she's involved with that program to join the two Hmong over to Manga Tautere.
With the tunnel.
Yeah. So there's obviously, there has been stuff going on. I just can't remember what she said. I was just intrigued that you weren't hearing a lot of noise, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember the map of where they're trapping, so...
Tons of berries.
Yeah.
That was a curious thing, because the dominant tree on both Carioi and Pirongia are tawa, which is kind of, you know, common and unexpected. And on Pirongia, almost every tawa tree is kind of laden with berries. And I think I've maybe eaten two or three berries on Carioi. You just very rarely find tawa berries on Carioi.
But the trees are there.
The tree, it's the dominant tree. It's the most probably prolific tree on the mountain. So that's kind of an interesting one. I don't know if it's an age thing, although there's some pretty big ones, big trees. Or, you know, if it's a pollination thing, there's so much more life on Carioi, so that kind of doesn't make sense. But
well, there's more things eating the berries? Or are you saying they're just not growing?
I don't think they're growing.
Interesting.
Yeah, you get a lot of berries off the tree when they are fruiting.
We need to ask Louis what he's seen up there, because he's over it all the time.
Yeah. So he's the Carioi ranger.
He's probably up there now.
But I do love a mystery, something to kind of give a bit of curiosity to over the years, and one day maybe I'll get an answer.
Yeah. So with the boys, like you, your Kura Taiao, your whole Nature Connection program is a lot for, it's for adults as well, but a lot of stuff is for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So from your perspective, what is the purpose, I guess? And I know it was driven by the boys, but maybe that's a part of the purpose too. But what do you see coming out of this for them?
Well, the same whether it is kids or adults, I think providing a context, which is probably quite unfamiliar for a lot of us, but familiar for humankind, you know, as a species, because this is where we've lived and we've learnt for, you know, pretty much all of our time in this beautiful world. So just kind of returning to a context, and the challenges all have real meaning, because finding comfort in the forest, which can be an uncomfortable environment, you know, obviously it's damp and it can be cold and scary for some people, you know, and there's a lot of things to be safe in the bush that you do need to give attention and awareness to. So just returning to that very natural, you know, humanly natural context and environment, and learning how to live there without too many modern things, modern equipment to, to sort of shortcut and bypass and simplify the experience for you. Yeah, it just brings out a lot of very important aspects of what we are as humans, and highlights them and reminds us why we are what we are and where we came from.
Were the boys challenged or were they having fun? Or both, I guess.
Yeah, both. Yeah, I mean, it's... yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, it's a new experience for them. And the night was cold, you know, huddling close together through the night. And, you know, obviously, like, creating those close bonds, they're really good friends already, but, you know, sort of relying on each other in a way for their comfort sort of adds another level to that. I mean, lighting a fire, cooking on the fire.
Yeah,
They brought in some meat and some flour, sort of making bread, sort of damper, but we didn't really have a receptacle. You know, normally you got a mixing bowl or something, so sort of improvising with that.
Okay, and then yeah, cooking. How do you do that?
We got no pots, no pans, so just cooking. They found the wrapper, so they were using like a wrapper, for something like a plastic wrapper.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of using that to hold the flour, and
okay.
they did good. Yeah, they cooked all the food pretty well. They ate well.
I mean, I've seen you cook steak on rocks next to a fire, like it's a real simple way to do it.
Yeah,
but were they making something quite runny, or were they? I guess you don't make it runny.
No, they made it pretty firm, and yeah, they cooked it quite well just on the coals. But even that, just the timing of it, you know, when you sort of not too familiar with fire cooking, it's quite easy to kind of put things on too early or on the flames, and
you can't dial it, you can't turn the dial and like get the right temperature,
not with a dial, but tending the fire,
like it's not like an oven is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in a way it is when you sort of get you know, get used to it and proficient, because you are in complete control of the temperature and how long, you know, the timer, you know, ovens have a timer and it goes off at a certain time. So how long you want your fire to burn at what temperature.
And it's not so long. Like my grandmother used to cook like that with that stove in the, you know, the old school stove, like an Aga, but that was what the rich people had.
Mm.
That kind of stove, and you have the fire going in one corner, and so the temperature varies away from where the fire is. So, and I guess when you're really familiar with that, you know exactly where to put something to cook it. So
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just with everything, you know, the more you do things, the more efficient and effective and intuitive you're able to be with it. But yeah, definitely, you know, proud of you know, it was easy for them in a way, but that's only, you know, reflecting sort of where they're at and their understanding, and they've all come for all that. These guys have actually, like, you know, had a decent period of time at Kudatayo.
Yeah.
So they're no stranger to fires and
all that
skill set, knot tying.
And your boy Matai especially will be no stranger to this kind of life.
Yeah, yeah. He likes to think he is, but in reality, he knows it. He does know it. You know, he's familiar. Well,
he's at Fraser now, isn't he? So he'll be meeting kids who've lived a proper urban life. So and when I say proper, I don't mean that in any great sense.
Yeah,
just a very urban life.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
The differences.
But yeah, again, you know, in that regard, the fact that the boys sort of, you know, called it in themselves, I've definitely sort of encouraged and pushed a little bit over the years to try and you know, get Matai to experience some of nature's magic.
Yeah.
So it's really nice for me that they've called it in themselves and had a great time, and next time they want to do it for a few days and it's just a start, and it won't, you know, it won't be long before I'm not there. You know, yeah. I just want to get them to a stage where, more than anything, they know that they can be safe and they can keep the bush safe. So obviously, like, lighting a fire in the bush, there's actually a lot I'd need them to know.
Yeah.
Before I'm okay, because obviously, if anything got out of hand, I'll always feel responsible for that. So I'm making sure.
And I guess this weekend,
skills down.
This weekend, there wasn't too much of a concern about that.
I'm always nervous about it, though.
Well, that's sensible, isn't it? Right, to be a little bit edgy.
Yeah,
about it.
You know, of all the fires that I've had, you know, which is a lot, in hundreds of fires probably that I've lit in the bush, and there's never ever been a moment, you know, where anything's been out of control ever. But that doesn't mean I get to be complacent. I think the more fires that I light, the more nervous I get, in a way.
You're aware of the possibilities.
Yeah, it frightens me a lot. You know, acknowledging that. I said to the boys going in, you know, the forest isn't a place, it's a community, and it's a community that, you know, for a lot of our time on this planet, we've been a big part of. But it's a place that, you know, needs so much respect and care when we're in there, as we do in any community that we're sort of part of.
And that all fits in with the being present thing as well. Like, in our modern life, we can afford to have our head in the clouds or, you know, our head somewhere else when we're present in a particular place. It doesn't matter. Everything's taken care of.
Mm.
I don't have to do anything to keep the electricity going in here or the heater on or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I can be elsewhere in my head.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's you know, every moment there's things that you need to be aware and switched on and conscious of.
Yeah. So you school holidays starting at the end of this week.
Yeah.
It's Kura Tai. I've got a holiday program.
Yeah, I'm only able to offer 3 days because I've got a bit of bush time planned for myself. So next Monday, and then a Thursday or Friday of the second week, and I'll just be on a camp at Upper Wainui. Never a huge plan.
Yeah,
just community, and you know, rock up, and we've got so many things we can offer. Anything that the kids are curious around, whether it's just hanging out and playing some nature based games, or crafting, or cooking on the fire, or we'll see what the days bring.
Yeah,
but just on that sort of umbrella of connecting to ourselves and how we're feeling, and the group of people who are there on that day, and how we sort of weave it all together.
For the uninitiated, it might be like, how do you make the connection happen? What do you do to make that happen?
Because
you don't, because you let it happen. So it might be hard for people to imagine.
Yeah.
How you? I mean, you must be setting things up a little bit.
I mean, as a mentor, there's so many techniques you can use, but I guess trying not to make things happen in a way allows things to happen.
Okay, yeah, true. We're not used to environments like that, to be honest.
We rock up and we all, you know, hang out and, you know, I don't know, share some food or put some tea on the fire or something and check in and talk and share stories and what we want to do, and after a while people just sort of start leaving that circle, as they might need to run around and things just start unraveling. So once everyone gets going and people head in different directions, and before you know it, there's a couple of people whittling and a couple of people lighting a fire and a couple of people in a hammock chatting under the tree and a couple of people playing a game, and then everyone just bounces off each other and shares what they're doing, and people might, you know, mix and match between different activities or start something new.
This is like the unschooling conversation, like how conventionally we're used to education looking like a certain thing. So how is learning happening when they're doing that, when they're in a hammock?
Well, first of all, you know, because it's about connection, it's connecting to how you're feeling and having a space to try and figure that out. You know, there's things on offer, there's countless options really of what you could be doing, and to actually like guide yourself and direct yourself based on how you're feeling. Yeah. For a young person, in itself, is a huge learning. You know, often we're told where to be and what to do. You know, even as an adult, and we don't always have that very simple thing, but that opportunity to actually go, oh, what am I feeling right now, and what's the right thing for me to do right now?
Yeah,
and how do I get there? Especially in a social environment, you know, when you're watching other people and as a kid trying to figure that out and all those influences and I guess pressures, you know, yeah. They're playing and it looks fun. I feel like I should be doing that, but, you know, my heart's not really feeling that. And how do we navigate that? So that alone is huge, huge life skills for them. And then learning how to be communities is another thing, you know, because they're not being told. It's a choice to be kind to each other share.
Kids are quite good when they're, I've noticed in that situation, of creating their own games and their own rules and their own negotiating techniques for things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we have a tendency to want to step in and make sure it goes right as adults in this society, but
yeah,
it's not necessary all the time.
And I think... I know that the most beautiful moments that I've experienced at Kuratayo are moments which no way I would have been able to create by facilitating something. It's things which have happened which are just far too complex and just completely out of anything that I or anyone could really control. It's just the people there being free and weaving together something in a way which only nature can really offer. And sometimes getting there is a journey, you know. Sometimes there's moments of people being bored or being a bit lost and diving into some uncomfortable emotions, you know, needing some support with that, and then finding their feet and being grounded. But when it flows and when you get those moments which only a natural open free space can really facilitate, it's just golden and such a beautiful thing for me and for the kids to share.
So you've been doing this for quite a few years now, so, and a lot of the kids have been coming along for several years. When if you get a new child comes along and they've come from quite a directed kind of world, are they initially a little bit at sea about it, or I guess they know, if they know the others, they won't be?
Everyone's that. I mean, even some of the people that have been coming a while, you know, some people in their own nature actually appreciate sort of guidance and direction, and, you know, even after a few years, you know, it's still a difficult thing for them to sort of check in with themselves and sort of, you know, be guided by their own feelings and their own heart. I guess in a way it's easier. They can be a lot more excited. I think the difference between someone that's been coming for a while and someone that hasn't is fire and knives and all of these things have become so normalized.
Yeah,
you know, and that can take a few years. You know, it's an exciting thing to be, you know, have the freedom to use a knife and to light a fire and to
Been allowed near them
to really explore that. But once that exploration, you know, has a certain level of depth, fire's just fire, you know, and the knife and the tools that we're using there, just, you know, the metal tools that you use when you need them. So once you kind of get over that sort of exciting novelty stage. And then I guess that's when the real nature sort of happens, and it's an empty space for the kids to create, you know, because it's not really influenced by novelty values and things which they haven't been able to do. You know, it's just people start seeing the natural world really for what it is, and knowing when the right time and place is to sort of do and use certain things.
And where are the cell phones?
Wow, I don't know if many of these kids are. Mostly they're kind of younger kids.
Right.
Never have I had to, even with adults to be honest, never have I had to sort of think about.
No, so it's a thing. I mean, it says Nature Connection on the title, so
yeah.
People know.
However, like, you know, bring these teenage boys in, like, it wasn't a thing for me to, hey, leave your cell phones behind.
Because presumably you actually get quite good coverage up on top of, well, you weren't on top, but
sometimes
you get good access when you're up high, so conceivable.
None of us were inclined to check, but I think, I mean, it's easy to, and this is what, you know, an important point really, is it's kind of easy to connect with nature when that's all there is.
Yeah.
You know, when you get rid of things and you're there in the forest, what else can you do but connect with nature? And that's great. But actually, for nature connection to really have an impact in your life is being connected when you have got your phone in your pocket and you are at work and you are living your busy life.
Yeah.
That's when we need it.
That skill.
Yeah, and that's, you know, so actually, like, having your phone, having it there, but being able to make that choice and connect with yourself and that sort of self-discipline. It's not self-discipline if you just leave it at home, but having it there and just making those choices, and that's where the real sort of difference and change and impact on your life, you know, your whole life, not just the times that you go for a walk or go into the bush. That's when it sort of pays its...
I actually think this generation will be good at doing that. I'm contrary to what most people say about young people and devices, but I think that because they're so young, they will. Like we all do, you know, in our teens and 20s, we all have things that are like, I'm really sick of being an idiot and doing this, or, you know, we all went through that, and see, I'm not going to, you know, I'm making a change.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a lot easier to do when you're young than when you're older. And I think it's often it's the parents and grandparents who have trouble putting devices down, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know we see our kids at school appear to be struggling to put them down, but I remember they all said that about TV to my generation. You know, you guys are going to get square eyes. You're watching the goggle box. It's like, it's bad for you.
Yeah.
But as soon as we left home and left the school environment, like I was at university and we had in our hostel, we had 10 floors and 2 floors had TVs on them. And the next year I was there, no floor wanted a TV. Like we were asked at the start of the, because I was there for 2 years, and at the start of the year, the person who was their head student on the floor, like the warden, I suppose was the word, they were like, do we want a TV on our floor? And all of us second years were like, told the first years, you don't want, it kills the life, it's less fun if there's a TV on your floor.
Yeah.
And so after a couple of years, no floor wanted a TV on the floor. So yeah, that's how the hostel was, a multi-story building, so that's how the hostel was divided up into floors.
Yeah, okay.
And that's, you know, that was our little, that was our group of 30 odd people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was the TV generation.
Yeah.
As soon as we got out of home, we're like, no, we don't want a TV.
Yeah, okay.
That's just going to ruin things. Yeah. And so I have a lot more faith in young people learning how to cope with devices than most people my age do. Yeah.
But again, you know, bringing young people into nature, you know, even if they do bring the phone, it's just such a stronger, you know, if you were in the room of people and you knew everyone else, you know, you were the only one that had a phone, or, you know, no one else was looking at their phone, and you know, you're kind of the only one, you'd feel, you know, a bit weird about that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how you'd feel in nature, you know, like if you are, it's just it reflects back at you so much more powerfully, you know.
Yeah, right.
You won't think about it walking down the street or sitting in a cafe to just get your phone and check. You won't think about it, you know. It's just, no one's watching, you know. That's what everyone does. But when you're in that community, and obviously it's not just trees, it's just all of these very strong, powerful beings surrounding you, it does feel weird amongst those people. And I think, you know, young people feel that as well. So again, it's a great sort of place to learn those life skills. It's such a supportive, strong environment where, you know, there's no real masks in nature.
Yeah,
everything sees you for what you are, and you start seeing yourself for what you are as well.
And even just to have the experience of doing life without your device nearby, I imagine for some kids that's quite novel, for some at certain ages, not when they're little, obviously, but. Just to know that it's possible might be a step for some. Hey folks, we've been talking to Rob's about Nature Connection. You mentioned just before we go there, Kuratayo's got a couple of things happening over the either end of the holidays. Where do people find out?
Holiday program, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram and kuratayo.com, and
spelt
K KURATAIAO. So we've got, yeah, the holiday program, and next term starting up, we've got obviously the Bush School, and we're going to be increasing numbers there, actually, so there'll be more spaces available at our community Bush School.
So they'll be after school?
No, hours. During school hours, Tuesday and a Friday.
Let's mention this. Some it appears that the schools and the parents are quite happy to bring their kids out of school for a bit during the week to do this and then back to school.
I keep out of that side of it.
It's happening.
But from my point of view, I'm there and I'm, you know, putting that time aside to hold that space and to share and support people with their nature connection journey, adults and kids. On the adult front, every term we do fortnightly weekends, an adult and teenagers nature connection and bushcraft program.
Yeah.
And there'll be another family bushcraft day for the whole family to come out and make some memories and learn some things together as well, coming up probably July, August.
Okay, awesome. All right, thanks, Robs.
Cheers.
Okay, folks, end of the show for the day. I will be back again tomorrow morning.